guess it's time to call the Plan Commission meeting of December the 4th to order. Mr. Fuchs, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson.
Here.
Commissioner Hogan.
Here.
Commissioner Thinnes.
Here.
Commissioner Haley.
Here.
Commissioner Morrow.
Here.
Alderwoman Mayor.
Here.
Commissioner Fowler.
Here.
We have a full house of quorum and on the properly posted meeting. Please join the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody. In your packet, item 2A, approval of the regular meeting minutes of November the 20th. Is there a motion?
Motion.
And the second?
Second.
That was kind of you. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 3A, Housing and Income Elderly Incorporated, Brumwood Park Plan Development District, number 21, Mr. Deedle.
Thank you, sir. This matter is before the Plan Commission again. It was at the October 23rd meeting as well, and an earlier one before that. The applicant has made further revisions to the architecture of the building and to the site. They added the overlook boardwalk area that we discussed at the last meeting. I can go over the changes in more detail if you wish. I'll just hit a couple highlights. Staff is recommending approval. We do believe the architecture is built better than it was before. They have addressed most of the concerns and questions that we raised both at staff level and at the Plan Commission. There still are a number of conditions. The cover, the remaining recommendations that we had, and the comments that the Plan Commission had. I'll mention a couple of them for reference or examples. We talked about bringing the brick all the way to the top of the building. They did that in most instances, although at the ends and the corners of the building on the inside corners, they stopped, as Nick is showing, they stopped the second floor. We meant and intended that that area go all the way to the top as well. So that would be one of the recommendations or conditions in the draft ordinance. We also talked about revising the plans that they're all consistent with one another. We've had a problem that that the site plan, building footprint doesn't match the landscaping plan, the architectural plan, all that. The landscaping plan is right, but some of the other plans are not right. Those need to be revised, and that is one of the conditions as well. We talked about the ordinary high water mark and the shore buffer at the last meeting. Building could be getting close to that shore buffer. They did get the DNR out there to determine where the ordinary high water mark was. They provided some maps showing where those points were, but they didn't add that information to the Natural Resource Protection Plan, nor did they show that shore buffer on the Natural Resource Protection Plan, so that's a condition as well. So again, I can go through the conditions or recommendations in more detail if you wish, but they did address some. The architecture is better. We are recommending approval, and the other thing to note is the only action needed tonight would be a recommendation to the Common Council on the Plan Development District Amendment.
So the motion on October 23rd was to table to allow the applicant to work with the staff to incorporate ordinance recommendations, high water table, the architectural changes. So we went from 24 conditions?
If you broke some of them into their parts, yes.
And to be fair to the applicant, we're now down to about 10.
Or 11.
The other ones being normal boilerplate.
Yes, yes.
Commissioners? Commissioner Thinnes? I'm sorry, Commissioner Fowler.
Thank you, Mayor. Joel, does the applicant express any objections to any of these recommendations, or are they willing to?
I believe they're willing to do this. They had expressed some reservations on things like the brick, so they have in their back pocket. If we preferred the brick to stop at the second floor, they have a picture of what that would look like if the Plan Commission wanted to approve that instead. We did receive some additional information on the soffits and the boardwalk, but we'd still need more information on that. I believe they're waiting to make sure that that's what the Plan Commission wants, and then they will provide those details. So as far as I know, they are supportive of the changes if the Plan Commission agrees with those changes.
Okay. For the record, there's an item on the plan, on the agenda, item A, item 3A1A, which is a determination by the Plan Commission whether it's minor or major. That was done on October 23rd, so that will not be taken up tonight. Other comments? Commissioner Haley.
One small comment suggestion. The recommendation is to provide detailed plans for the boardwalk and overlook area. I'd recommend paying close attention to, you're going to need a curb cut, a ramp there from the roadway so that that is accessible to the Americans with Disabilities Act. It doesn't show on the site plan. Let's not miss that one. So that, the whole idea with the client base is that they'd be able to get out there. Let's not have a curb head there.
Yes, please. Please come forward. Give your name and address, please.
Yeah. My name is Mike Dufek with Coetzee Construction. We're a general contractor that's been helping with the budget and the approval process. And I guess first, on behalf of the team, I want to thank staff. I know this wasn't a layup from the get-go, but staff's been very helpful in helping us get the goal. And we're more than willing to work with you. You know, the small amount of brick on the inside isn't an issue. I know I spoke to Bob several times today. He said if there's minor issues, absolutely, there's not a concern there. I think we're getting very close. We're hopeful that we're getting close. And any of those minor changes, we certainly will incorporate as we move forward. But obviously, as we move through the process, we're pretty far off at the get-go. And now 11 revisions later, we're almost kind of glad that we didn't take it to the next level of detail because we would have provided a lot of details earlier that would have been modified throughout the process several times. So I think we're at the point now where hopefully if we're getting very close, we're looking hopefully for approval that we can now take it to the next set and do conceptual and design or construction type documents that will give you all the detail that you're looking for railing types to soffit types to decking types to building material types and colors. But really, we didn't want to get it to that point until we had enough approval or enough, agreement that we were moving in the right direction. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Stennis.
I just have a couple questions, and these are relative to the area where the garage door is located for the underground parking. Just adjacent to that, it looks like there's a couple of utility doors that is also in the lower exposure. And the rendering that I'm looking at here appears to have a different material there. It's a gray. I guess I'm on the second sheet. That's a south elevation on the third sheet. Is that intended to be the same material as the walls adjacent to the garage door there? That's the foundation material, brick or block?
It certainly could be. It could be the brick that's alongside the garage. I think when Bob and I talked about this originally, it was meant to tie in the columns under the community balconies. The base at the very bottom of that column is an individual type of product that's not seen anywhere else. And we tried to find another spot to incorporate that material so that it didn't look out of place at those columns. We thought this might be a good place to do it. But in any case, those are the details that we'd be more than willing to work with the staff on figuring out what materials we want.
Okay, it is a finished material, though. It isn't a concrete block or a masonry unit or a cast-in-place wall or anything.
Right, our intent would be to do a cast-in-place wall in the basement and then finish any of the exposed with a finished product.
Mayor.
I just wanted to make sure that there were no easements with the other property.
The parking?
Because it's so close, yeah.
The utility easements still have to be reviewed and refined. There is a condition in regards to one of them to verify. Parking has been addressed, I believe, at the last meeting. Signage, we're suggesting be shared. I'm not aware of any other issues that are outstanding between the two properties.
Are you comfortable, Mr. Deedle, that we're at a point where things match enough that
yes,
that you can honestly sit in front of the Common Council and say we recommend recommendation? Or we recommend
I would say that yes, we're at the point now that we often would be at the first meeting of the Plan Commission, hopefully recommending approval to the council.
Thank you. Excuse me. Commissioner Thinnes.
One more question on the renderings here. I'm on the first page. This is at the northwest elevation next to the drive-around parking lot there where the main entrance is. I'm looking at a concrete piece sticking. Is that a vent well there? Look at the plan.
Nick, there are...
Yes, it is.
There are some, rather than having individual units, which would have vents on the exterior of the building at every single apartment or every single condo or every single unit, we are going to put the systems in the garage. In order to do that, we have to get fresh air. And so some of these, I think they are shown on one of the floor plans, but if you look at...
Right, I'm looking right between 4 and 4.5 columns, along 8. There appears to be a vent grill there for a box vent that's in the, like a vault vent, right here.
Right.
Is that exposed concrete cast in place?
Yeah, so if you're looking at this interior drawing, the gray box, no, that's the same condition that we would have at the parking garage. It's not our intent to have any exposed precast form walls or cast in place concrete walls exposed at any location.
That should probably be covered with the same material that's covering the foundation knee wall.
Agreed.
You know,
yes.
This same stuff that takes this other side. I know this is on the back side of the building, but you'll see how this grade drops here and you have this foundation block on there.
Yeah, continue to extend that all the way around.
On the other side.
Yep, understood.
Commissioner, can you quantify and elucidate your comments such that they can go into the record and staff can follow up on it?
The gray right there should be the same color as this over here.
Just
cool.
Keep going.
Yeah,
keep going.
Right there on the corner.
The lower level mechanical box outs should be finished with a product similar.
The same as the foundation, right, the foundation knee wall on the other side.
So as part of condition number... So we would say that would be 4D.
Yes.
Can you fashion something, Joel, while we continue our conversation here? Any other comments or questions from the commission? Commissioner Fowler?
It might be helpful, Mayor, if we just ask them not to have any exposed precast concrete or concrete foundation walls. They all have to be covered with a matching facade that would be in harmony with whatever would be nearby. I don't know how you would say that, but...
You just did.
There you go.
Harmony.
Joel?
Yep.
I'll send it to you.
The only reason I'm pointing these out is because that is the request we made at the last meeting, and some of these are slipping through the cracks, so...
Which is why the motion to table to get all this put on one piece of paper.
Right.
Is,
yeah.
Exactly. Is there a motion regarding this matter?
Move approval.
Subject to the conditions as...
Subject to conditions as laid out by the commission and by the planning staff.
Second. Discussion of the motion. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Vote is 6-0. I'll get it right. I just didn't count it. 6-0. Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item 3B, Victory of the Lamb, a church project, as well as Kayla's crew. Let's get given a second. Pastor Ben, is this you? Mr. Deedle.
Thank you. This is a site plan. This project was previously approved about a year ago for a rezoning to institutional and a comprehensive master plan amendment for this property to be shown as institutional. At that time, they weren't ready yet for the detailed building plans or the site plan, so they didn't do that at that time. That's what's before us tonight. Staff is recommending approval with a number of conditions as well. I could mention a couple of them in reference. Staff is recommending that any future phases, whether the future proposed expansion of the church itself, its parking lot, the playground, all those would have to come back, or any of those that they wanted to proceed with would have to come back as a site plan amendment. As a site plan, this project before us tonight only requires Plan Commission approval, and similarly with the site plan amendment, any of those future additions would also only need Plan Commission approval. Again, the other conditions, they are proposing to extend public water to their property and building and extend that pipe all the way down to the southwest corner of their property. Public sewer is not available at this time, but staff is recommending that at such time in the future as public sewer becomes available, they would hook up. They had previously indicated that they were supportive of that. Other recommendations and conditions are smaller and more technical in detail. I could mention a couple, I think. Probably the erosion control, where Kayla's crew's playground is proposed, the parking lot would end there. It's currently a farm field, bare soils. Depending what happens out there, how long that partial parking lot stays, there could be erosion problems. There'd be mud being tracked in if people were walking out there into the playground. So we are recommending that they do have some kind of rough grading and some kind of landscaping at a minimum, some grass seed planted out there to stabilize everything. Also, there's other minor corrections that I believe would need to be made to the erosion control plan as well, although I think technically or typically the engineering department picks those up when they do their final review. So those are a couple. I can go into more detail or touch base on all of them if you wish, but again, staff is recommending approval.
So I got to take this opportunity to say there are 14 written recommendations. I consider more than half of them boilerplate technical corrections. So yes. Let me just make my comment. You know, this is the way plans should come to the city, not what we've experienced recently. This gives us something to work with and not much changes to be made. Comments from the commission. Commissioner Haley.
Just one, and my understanding is that the actual playground plans will come back to us at a point in the future. But as you plan and develop those, you're kind of in a tough site from a safety perspective. You're tucked between the detention basin and the parking lot, so you're going to want to think carefully about how to control children and provide access to and from that. There's no walks shown. So as you develop those plans, I would pay serious attention to that and keep child safety in mind, because it's kind of tucked in there in a dangerous corner, if you will.
Commissioner Fowler.
I just want to reiterate Commissioner Haley's comments as well. I noticed that as well. Second thing on the erosion control plan, I noticed when I looked at the plan sheet that had the erosion control fencing, it seemed to me to be incomplete. It didn't follow all of where there would be construction activity. Normally on erosion control fencing, you would want to completely enclose or at least have the fencing wrap around your construction site so that any kind of rain event or any kind of washout that would occur would be captured by that erosion control fencing. So I would just note that that should be changed on that plan sheet to show that that erosion control fencing completely encompasses those construction sites.
If we start talking about the playground, I just warn all of the plan commissioners and the common council members, what I saw tonight, don't get in front of it. but I must say I haven't had talk, chance to talk to Kelly about this. I am concerned about bus circulation, because if this park turns out, and sorry, Pastor Ben, this is the playground, not the church. The church is fine. But, I'm concerned that if this park turns out the way I hope it will be, and Shelley hopes it will be, there's going to be buses in there. And I have concern for the circulation, traffic circulation. I don't anticipate much conflict with the church as a church, but a church with the school component, we might have some issues. So we need to work together on that to make sure that we can get buses in, turned around, out, and not cause problems for each other. Commissioners?
We can play on the playground, we just can't get in front of it, all right? just ask. Clarification.
Commissioner Dennis?
Joel, I saw some notes in here saying that at one time the building was in a different position on the site. Could you tell me what that was, what the difference was?
During a concept, during the rezoning and comprehensive master plan, they did have some conceptual plans. So that's how the building was reoriented differently at that time.
Was the building turned where the front of it was facing out towards Loomis Road?
Hopefully we'll be able to find the plans. I don't remember.
Go back a couple sheets where you were. I think there was one of the elevations was noted, and it looked like it might have been from one of the old.
Yeah, that's Chris Hager, Corp. Shooter Architects. That's extremely old. Basically, the building flipped exactly on the same axis so that what we consider the front entrance, the glassy area, was facing directly what would be
north
west.
Or north to the west.
Yeah, northwest, right. And the reason for the change really was two-part. There's other smaller reasons, but south-facing, lazing, obviously, we were hoping for
exposure
for that during the winter time, and then the majority of water on the site is actually going towards what would be the southeast, so we wanted to make sure that we were capturing the water before it goes into the wetlands that are at the lower end of the site, and at the conceptual stage, we actually had a ring of water almost around the entire building to handle that, and it didn't make a lot of sense, so what we've done, in a lot of ways, helps the site.
You also had a thing on there, Joel. One of my concerns with this is that the south or the eastern elevation starts to get a pretty plain when you turn that corner, and you know the rendering that they have coming down Loomis Road from those southwestbound lanes gets that view of the backside and that somewhat less featureful elevation. And there's a mixture of materials on there, and it looks like you've got some siding, some cementitious board siding,
correct,
some brick on that side, and then you called out some metal panel, and I'm not sure where on the drawings on the elevations that metal panel was used or whether it was basically strips between the windows in the front. Or
yeah, well, it is going to be just the strips between the windows, but at one point we had proposed metal panel on the precast where the roof ran into the precast because we've had some issues with you know, construction issues with leaking, so we wanted to have a second barrier in front of that. We've worked that out with our engineers and contractors, so we would not need to do that. So the metal panel would just be between the windows at this point. And on some of the columns that you're seeing in the colonnade along the front.
Okay, and then I noticed you had a recommendation of doing something with the windows on those elevations, and I wasn't clear that you were making a number of recommendations there of some other type of, like a mullion cap or a sunshades or...
We were just giving examples. So all the condition would require is some kind of window treatment, something added. And we just gave suggestions or ideas, and they would get to pick. Although if staff had serious concerns with it, we would bring it back to the planning commission. So we're not telling them what kind of treatments or what kind of changes they would have to do, other than they would have to pertain to the windows.
Embellish it.
Yes.
Way.
And we have already redesigned that. We just haven't shared it with staff yet, but we will work with staff on that.
Just a little mayoral story. As I was a young alderman sitting in the chair that Commissioner Fowler now sits in, somebody took me to task at one point for voting to approve a church on St. Martin's Road in what they consider prime commercial areas. I'm an economic development guy. Business, right? Well, my point of view is very easy. There is nothing bad a church could do to a community other, period. They only help. And I'm proud to say you're coming.
Just ask one more question.
Absolutely.
The main church portion of the building, basically a box of precast tip-up panels, is that what your intention is?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Is that brick on there?
No, we would be painting the base a different color than the top.
It's a paint application?
Correct.
Okay.
And then we would have a reveal that's cut into the precast all the way along, that horizontal line that you're seeing. And then the windows in the back are actually going to be colored glass.
Right. So it's painted all in the same plane. It's a flat panel except for the horizontal reveal line that goes through, setback about an inch or something.
Correct.
Okay. And the seams?
Those would be, so the panels would be in 12-foot sections.
Yeah, and you're going to leave the caulk color or something different there?
Correct. It'd be a caulk. It really wouldn't, you wouldn't see it as prevalent as it is there.
The type of construction is exactly the same as what was used at the school building over by the middle school there.
Yep, I get it. Commissioners? Any other comments? Is there a motion to approve a resolution approving a site plan for Victory of the Lamb Lutheran Church Worship Center and Kayla's Crew Accessible Playground and Pavilion Development?
So moved. Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Go forth and build a church.
Yeah, a half mile east is the growth lies.
Okay. Item 3C. Disturbing you guys? Okay, item 3C. What do we have on the agenda? Sorry to do this legally. Discussion concerning and consideration of a possible comprehensive update or replacement of the city's unified development ordinance. It's been an issue with me since I've become a young alderman. Former Alderwoman Hogan and I were on the council when the witness plan development unified development ordinance was passed. I believe I made the motion. I'm not sure what now Commissioner Hogan had to say about it, but it passed unanimously. I personally would like to see a lot of changes made to it. This was discussed at the Common Council Tuesday night. The Common Council made an action, but for our purposes, I'd rather have a discussion and talk about the action later. So, Mr. Deedle.
Staff agrees. There's, you know, the comprehensive master plan. The Unified Development Ordinance. It's getting old. It's been, it was combined into one document back in 1998. That was the last time it was a comprehensive review and revision of that ordinance. Just like comprehensive master plans, the planning profession recommends that our ordinances be reviewed and revised as necessary on a periodic basis. Some places recommend on the 5 to 10 year schedule that comprehensive master plans are done. Furthermore, the planning profession also recommends that you probably usually do that at the same time. The same time that you would update or amend comprehensively your comprehensive plan, same time you should be looking at your ordinances. We didn't do that at the time that we updated our comprehensive master plan. There was a little bit of discussion at the time. There is a recommendation, though, in the plan that as soon as possible, the city would undertake a comprehensive review and possible revision of the Unified Development Ordinance. But that was about 5 years ago. So from that standpoint, a planning profession standpoint, generically, it's time to look at this. But more specifically, there's always been concerns expressed by various people over the years about the ordinance. That's too large, too cumbersome, too complicated, too confusing. More specifically, there's been a lot of concerns raised about the SIC code system that we use for identifying uses or land uses that are permitted and special and not allowed at all within all the zoning districts. There's been concerns and exasperation expressed with other elements of the ordinance, fences and accessory structures and lot coverage. And those are just, you know, the more obvious ones. Staff ourselves have had concerns with the ordinance where sometimes things are not easy to find. Sometimes things are contradicting one another. Sometimes things are just not set up to work well. One of my pet peeves is an example would be we have special uses. If it's a special use, it requires a public hearing and common council approval. What happens if it's just a tenant alteration, tenant change in a multi-tenant building? They're not changing anything on the outside of the building. And it's an acceptable use. It still has to go through planning commission, public hearing, common council. There should be an easier way to split those off. There should be an easier way where it's already a special use, already approved. They're only making small site plan changes. We should be able to do just a site plan or a site plan amendment instead of having to do a special use amendment for something relatively small on the outside. So those are just examples. So I said something along that line at the council meeting, and they picked up on that. We'll talk about that later. But we think there's enough of those that warrants comprehensive revision of the ordinance. So this memo that I prepared, I understand this is a potentially very large undertaking. Could be on comparable to the comprehensive master plan itself. Could be a multi-year effort. If we had consultants do it, it could be hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it. So I wanted to start, and the mayor agreed, or at least let me go and do it this way, that we just start with a simple discussion. See if there's interest, and if there is, we'll start to tackle this in more detail. If there is no interest, well, then we'll see where we go from there. So again, this memo covers, just briefly touches on some of those issues, briefly touches on, you know, what the Unified Development Ordinance is. It's a combination of a subdivision ordinance and a zoning ordinance. And then extra things that are commonly inserted into those two ordinances by many communities. We're not unique in anything we do here. Some, like the fact that the two ordinances are combined into one, is rare. We're only aware of two communities in Wisconsin that do it that way. But it's my understanding that it's more common on the East Coast and West Coasts. There are requirements by the state government that we have to do. For instance, we have to do shoreline zoning. We have to do floodplain zoning. Those are within the Unified Development Ordinance. We don't have to do general zoning. You know, the R1, the R2, R3. We're not required to do that. If we choose to do that, then there are things that go along with it that we have to do. All of that is within the Unified Development Ordinance. Then there's optional things the state allows communities to do. We've chosen to do some of those. Exclusive agricultural zoning, for instance. And there are other tools and policies and tools and practices that some communities use that we have in our ordinance as well. Natural resource protection, design standards. We have those in our UDO as well. Some communities do, some communities don't. So again, the Unified Development Ordinance is a combination of those two main parts, subdivision and zoning, with these other tools and processes and procedures and practices inserted there. But again, it's old. It has areas that conflict with one another. It has areas that aren't clear. I didn't bring the documentation, but I've kept all the memos, all the UDO text amendments, all the emails from the city attorney that clarifies something in the ordinance. All those documents are just about as thick as the UDO itself. Again, in my mind, another evidence, another piece of evidence that it's time to update or comprehensively revise, or potentially start with a brand new template. And there's so many versions, and that's another reason why I wanted to start easy and simple like this. There's so many options between these two extremes. You know, the one simplest would be, you know, pick what's of most importance to the city and change that one piece only. To toss out the UDO, find a new template that we like, and then add in the City of Franklin stuff that we want to it. And then between those two extremes, there's a multitude of options. So I was hoping to get some feeling and guidance from the Plan Commission and Council on thoughts on those matters. I wanted to see if there were other issues or elements of the ordinance of the UDO that the Plan Commission or Council had particular concern with, so I could start thinking about that. And then there's new ideas out there, too, that aren't reflected in our ordinance that I wouldn't have mind bringing up to talk about, see if we wanted to include some of them in our ordinance as well. So I don't want to sugarcoat anything. If we go towards this end where it's going to be a significant revision of the ordinance or a brand new template, it's going to be a significant amount of work. Even if we hired a consultant to do it, somebody would need to oversee the consultant. Somebody would need to make sure that they're incorporating things that still are important to the city. I'm not trying to say this is going to be simple or easy, but I'm saying that I think it's time to look at it and then try to get some direction from the council and the Plan Commission of what kind of changes, how in depth do we want to go. The only other thing I could mention is that the process is set up by state statute that the Plan Commission would ultimately have to recommend on this change, and the council would ultimately decide there'd be a public hearing. Strongly recommended that there be open houses, neighborhood meetings, those kinds of things to get additional public input before the Plan Commission makes a final recommendation. It's really important that the Plan Commission at least on one hand understand what the citizens' concerns are when they're preparing a final draft to go to the council, so that you can prepare the council to respond to those concerns, even if you don't agree with them. Or maybe you do agree with them, it's better to get those inputs early and make those changes in the draft before it goes to council. But there are other options. Again, you can create a task force or a special committee to do most of this work. The little bit of experience and research that I've done on other communities tackling this, it seems to be more common that instead of assigning a special committee or creating a special committee to do this, it's usually still the Plan Commission that's in charge of preparing the draft, but then the council or the Plan Commission would prepare or create committees to tackle specific issues. And then that committee would report back to the Plan Commission. Plan Commission would insert that in the draft, and then it would eventually go to Common Council. So I'm just touching base on just a couple of these main points if we decided to do this. My thought was if there was widespread support of doing this at this time, I would prepare a more detailed report tackling those kinds of issues in more detail. We need to decide what kind of priority we're going to have, how much consultant help are we going to have, you know, what staff is going to be in charge, confirming that the Plan Commission would be the lead. All those kinds of things would have to be hashed out, and we'd have to get that approval and direction from the council. The only other thing I would mention is whether that happens or not, staff still does track all these issues. So I can prepare that more detailed document without too much delay, but the actual changing of the ordinance, I haven't gotten very far. There would be a lot of research. You know, which of these newfangled ideas that are floating out there would we be interested in? I've barely scratched the surface on most of those things. But if you want to get a more detailed analysis of what are the current issues and concerns we've experienced, that won't take very long.
So throughout my election, I was talking to a lot of people, and part of what everybody told me was we need to be more business-friendly, we need to be more streamlined. Those are obviously more than just the citizens that I spoke with.
That's been my impression for the 22 some odd years I've been involved with the city. So one of the big stumbling blocks in my view has always been the Unified Development Ordinance and its complexity. And the fact that when a business or a developer comes to sit down with our staff and the staff pulls out the book, it's like, really? Really, guys? So one of my goals coming into office was to take a look at the UDO and either get rid of it or fix it. It's my personal goal. It's not the goal of this commission until you guys tell me what you want to do and make it a goal of your own. So I'm interested in hearing opinions. There are two here who have been doing this a long time, probably have opinions. So I think we all ought to hear them. Mr. Haley.
Okay. We have to be careful. I agree. It's time to look at it and revise it. We need to be careful because change for the sake of change isn't always good. We could actually make it worse. So I think it's essential that we identify those needed changes in our priorities first and really pin that down so we don't just start floundering around and fixing things that aren't necessarily broken. We need to identify those tough ones. As Joel says, it's a formidable task and a great time eater and expense, especially if you have a consultant do it. This would not be cheap. It would be great if we could do a little bit of research and find a model ordinance that somebody else has come up with that does a pretty good job, because you know we can't just scrap what we have. We have to have something to replace it. And then you also have to think about transitions to what was previously approved versus what in the future and grandfathering and all that stuff. It's got to be married. So it would certainly be simpler if we could find a couple of good model ordinances that maybe we could plagiarize legitimately. But otherwise, if we're not prepared to take on the big task, we start with identifying the biggest weaknesses, the biggest problems. Simplify those, the conflicts that you've identified and things like that, and start tackling that. If we're going to do it, it's going to take a serious commitment, and we need to be prepared to do that. It needs to be better when we're done and not worse. And again, change for the sake of change isn't where we want to be. If we're going to fix it, let's fix it. Let's do it right. That's all I can say.
Good, because this is a young plan commission in terms of experience. In terms of experience in dealing with these matters, so I look to the two elder statesmen here. So, Commissioner Fowler.
I agree with Kevin. Having served on MMSDs, we go through a 10-year planning cycle on a routine basis. We have our facilities plan that we put together. And I, you know, again, change for the sake of change is dangerous. And I've seen things get worse. And having served on the master plan group that when we put together our comprehensive master plan, I think citizen input is critical, but also to get the input from the developers. And Joel, you said you had information. I'm hoping that we have information, because I keep hearing how terrible it is to build. I mean, the mayor's heard this, and I've heard it at council meetings, that everybody keeps talking about how these developers and builders say it's terrible to build in Franklin. I'm hoping we have in writing some of their complaints or some of their concerns that we can then take those and see if we can address what were those specific concerns they have, instead of just people talking about problems that may not exist, but do they have really legitimate written down concerns that we can then take and look at. And I would be really, I would strive that we put together the objectives of what we want Franklin to look like. And I am fully in support having, and Janet knows this and others know this, that I really think the center part of Franklin where the school district is, we need more businesses. It's something I've talked about for a long time. However, we also have to take into consideration that we have a lot of natural resources. And natural resources should not preclude business. But when we give up those natural resources that Franklin has and a lot of other communities in Milwaukee County do not have, we want to make sure that what we're getting is of value and that it's going to benefit the community in many ways and not benefit the community. So that being said, I'd like to lay out some objectives. I'd like to include, you know, they have a laundry list of things I might want to include. We probably all will think of things we want to conclude, but natural resources, different forms of connectivity, those kinds of things I want to see stressed. We may, when we get down to the brass tacks of negotiating and talking about this, some of those may not be as strong as I would like. but I think it's a well overdue endeavor that we need to look at this. But again, we have to make sure the objectives that we have and the values and the resources that we have in this community are not sold cheaply. They don't mean that they preclude business or development from coming in, but we have to make sure we get our value.
Commissioner Haley.
Just a follow-up question for Joel. In years past, this commission undertook converting from the SIC codes to the NAICS codes. Would revisiting that make any sense at this point? Might that help to clear up some of the mud, or, you know, we got three quarters of the way through it, just pushed it aside due to time constraints, but is that worth dredging up, and might that solve some of the problems quickly?
It would solve one of the bigger problems, but I believe there's others. The Common Council did talk about this possibility that we would just pick things that are of most importance and only fix those parts at this time. That's what we've been doing over all these years, and it works. I don't believe the ordinance is broken. I just believe the ordinance can be better. But the more jerry-rigged fixes we make, the more likely something can get missed, something can get screwed up. And I feel it's getting to the point where it's like a Frankenstein monster. And I'm not aware of any major problems, but it just scares me every time the longer we go with these individual fixes. So, and it's the same thing that the planning profession talks about. This is another similarity between the comprehensive master plan. At some point when you start making so many changes to the comprehensive master plan, that's a sign the whole thing needs to be relooked at. Same idea applies to these ordinances. When you start making lots of changes to the ordinances, it's probably a sign that it needs to be revised comprehensively. We've done 50 UDO text amendments since 1998. I think that's a lot. So individually, nothing wrong with fixing stuff that need to be fixed and doing it on a piecemeal basis. I'm just very concerned that it's starting to add up. So again, it's perfectly within the realm of what the council can decide is to continue to do it that way. And I'm admitting right now, I don't believe it's broken. I just believe it can be better.
And that's why I asked, because we had made pretty good progress. We almost got through that, the conversion. And if that solves some of the problems, that might be a good step while we're identifying the other broken pieces. Right? I mean, I assume we've got all that stuff in a file. We were almost done with it.
At the last step, it was almost like we were almost ready to take a step back and decide or go back to, because we got to the point where we actually are trying to make changes to the table. Staff identified changes to the table, and there was a lot of debate and discussion. Like, there wasn't a clear consensus yet that we were ready to do that. So staff was almost ready to go back, take a step backwards and say, let's go back to the beginning, sort of, or towards the beginning. Remember what these alternatives are. We could continue to use the SIC code or the updated NAICS, and I believe the NAICS has 6 digits and the SIC code has 4, and that means that there's, you know, thousands of different categories. We could lump them, generalize them. Both those systems have 2-digit versions. So instead of thousands, there would be hundreds. Still not perfect, because those are still both NAICS and the SIC are created and used primarily for tax purposes by the federal government, not for land use purposes. But there are a number of communities that use those. So the other option that's always been on the table is to go back to, instead of using these categories that were created for tax purposes, go back to using more land use-based categories. None of these systems are perfect. There's always going to be that issue of brand new use, time machine, somebody making a time machine, what category does that fit in? We don't know. So we have to either create one or try to fit it into a category, or it fits into more. We'll always have those issues. And then there's a number of ways to fix that too. We can either go into a lot more detail, like the current UDO typically or often does, goes into detail to explain how to make those decisions. Or you can leave it broad in general and leave it up to staff to make those decisions. Or you can leave it broad in general, and whenever we run into one of those situations, we kick it up to the Common Council. And those are all viable options. except if we do truly want to continue to keep this as developer-friendly as we can, particularly process-wise. There's two different issues here. Where we set the bar in quality and natural resource protection and architecture, that's one element. The other element is process. How quick, how short, how simple can you keep the process? And then, so if you go to that one option of, okay, let's do simple, broad, general things in the UDO now. So we can shrink that ordinance down to one quarter of its size. But we can't tackle everything then. So there's going to be a lot of times where it's not clear. Does it go here? Does it go here? Or it doesn't fit at all. If we have to kick it to the Common Council every time to get that call made, we're not streamlining that process, keeping it short and simple. But it is a viable choice that the council can make.
I just want to make a point clear, because people like to put words in my mouth. My issue is 95% process driven. It's cumbersome. It's hard to get around. It's hard to understand. It's not up to date. It's a pain. 95% of my issue is process. I continually get frustrated. We've got apartment complexes with pillars between balconies that need to be replaced. It needs to come before the plan commission because the UDO says it does. Why? It's that kind of stuff that drives me crazy. Alderwoman Mayor, you were on deck.
As far as how cumbersome the document is it, and this was discussed at the Common Council meeting also, is the fact that it's not all in one, it's not, it hasn't been kept up to date. How much does that have to do with how cumbersome the document is?
That is part of it. I would say if you're picking individual elements, it's one of the major ones. But I believe there's so many elements when you start to add up, like the council's motion was, Joel, identify the top 20 issues. When you start to add up all those other 19, that's going to be more important than this one. And Jesse's already mentioned that he's going to complete that codification within the next month or so.
So how much will that help when Jesse's done doing that? And what happens to those, Jesse, when you put all that together, what happens to that document? What's the document actually going to look like then?
Jesse, city attorney?
Is it just going to be
look
twice
like the UDO? Because that's what it is. It's all the adopted ordinances. Except it'll be bigger. Click on one link on the city site instead of the trail of amendments thereafter. How many amendments are there since 2004?
I don't know offhand.
I'm going to guess about.
So it's not necessarily clarifying the document, it's just adding everything.
That's correct.
Into it.
Weeding it in.
The pages that are stapled to the back will be inserted into the...
More like shoehorning it into...
Yeah. It's like right now the pages are all stapled to the back.
Right.
You know, put into it where they belong, where they are associated with.
Alderwoman, my view of the action of the Common Council, and Joel just highlighted it, I wanted to keep that tamp down so I could get your opinions, but the council said, give us one document that's as clean as can be, which is what the city attorney's office is going to take care of. And then the planning staff, give us your top 20 issues with the now clean document. That's going to give us the opportunity from then on to look at what the planning staff comes and says, SIC codes, we have to do away with them or do something different. That may be one of your priorities. I don't know if it will or not, but that'll give us some hard discussions to have as to what happens next. Right now, it's the opinion of the Common Council and us six, seven, eight, as to what we ought to do. Some of it's very well informed. Some of it's not so. So I wanted to have a free-ranging discussion before we get some stuff from Joel, because we all may have had a point of view that would have offered him an additional direction. Because what's going to happen is, it's going to be an idea from the Common Council, but it's going to be the Plan Commission that drives the bus. Plan Commission recommends to the Common Council the following changes be made, and then it goes to the council. So I need us to be a little more vocal and more opinionated, I guess. We still have the floor.
As far as the SIC codes, 1998 was when the document was adopted. Has anything happened with the SIC codes since then?
Yep, they were updated once. I think the 98 specifically updated like the 1987 SIC codes, and then they subsequently were revised into the NAICS after 1998.
I thought the 1987 or the SIC code we use, I don't know, those were maybe updated, but the most recent is the 2012 NAICS.
That's available, or that we're actually...
Updates in between. Current system is 2012.
And who took that up? Or was that just an automatic?
The federal government. So again, for their tax purposes, they've been updating as new business industries get created, brand new industries get created, they create a new category, a new number for that kind of industry. And then eventually they went from that 4-digit identification system to a 6-digit identification called the NAICS. There's documents that clearly relate the old ones to the new ones, so nobody can get lost in the shuffle. Some communities have subsequently adopted the NAICS. Some communities haven't.
So how did that get incorporated into the UDO as far as what people, what prior councils or whatever approved as use in the city of Franklin?
You can jump in any time if I'm not quite hitting the question the right way. What we currently use now, we use that SIC code, and when we're trying to look at a project, Victory of the Lamb Church, does it fit into one of those SIC codes? If we believe it does, that's already inside the UDO, and for that SIC code, it would say P for I-1. It's a permitted use in the institutional zone. Pretty simple. It's working. What if they come up with a new one? It's a computer. Some computer thing is brand new. So if some company wants to do a computer thing, it's not just company. It's this kind of computer company. And if that doesn't have an SIC code, we're left standing here scratching our heads saying, it's not allowed anywhere. Well, let's see. Is it close enough to something that I can get away with? And the staff does this. Is it close enough to one of those SIC codes that we can get away with this and say it's okay? Yes. Okay, then we'll do that. And if it's a stretch, then we let the mayor know, we let Mark Liberta know, we'll let the alderman, we usually let somebody know, or Jesse, that we've stretched it a little bit farther, but we're comfortable doing it. There's been a few instances where we said, no, it's not close enough to this SIC code at all. We have to do a UDO text amendment. Revise the ordinance to create this new category to allow this to be a permitted or special use.
As far as the SIC codes that already exist, just basic, no new technology or just basic, those were chosen to not be included in the city of Franklin, for instance.
A few of
some,
them.
Someone said, we don't want this in the city at all.
That's my assumption. I wasn't here at the time. That's normally how it's done, and that's my assumption.
Well, it's in the document, which was approved.
Right.
So I guess that's what my question is how does that...
Well, because the issue is it lists all those SIC, not all the SIC codes. It lists most of them. And then it's because it's a table. So the SIC code is on the left, and at the top is all the different zoning districts. And then it's either P or for permitted, S for special, or nothing at all.
Right.
So then... I'm hoping and assuming that in those three instances, somebody consciously made that call. But there's like 1,000, 1,600, 1,800 of them. Who looked at all 1,800? How many people looked at all 1,800? I don't know. And there are some SIC codes that aren't listed there. So did they miss those, or did they purposely not want them? I don't know. I wasn't here.
Well,
but I have
guess,
to assume
I guess
that somebody...
As a developing city with... I feel as though that needs to be looked at very carefully because there is a reason that they are the way they are.
And that's why the Plan Commission, it wasn't easy for them to make a call because they knew how important this was. And I'm not, and again, I'm not trying to, you know, sugarcoat anything. Just that SIC code issue by itself could be substantial because it gets down to the meat and potatoes of everything. Do we want this kind of business in this kind of zoning district? There are often situations where in a unique situation, that is okay. Nobody would have a problem with it. If we start thinking that way, you're going to start putting P's next to everything, permitting everything. But then you're thinking the rarer situation where, well, sometimes this would be okay. Normally you should be looking at what's the norm, what's normally going to happen. What's a good one? Restaurants with drive-thrus. You would say, I can always think of a situation where a restaurant with a drive-thru is fine, not a problem. But normally, it could be next to residential areas. Do you want drive-thrus next to residential areas? Probably not. So a lot of times the knee-jerk response is to put a P next to it because you can think, yeah, drive-thru restaurant is fine. But there'll be instances where it's not. So normally, what are the odds? It's going to be off next to something you don't want to drive through. Don't put a P there. Put an S. That's the part that makes this doubly complicated if we want to tackle that issue. And then my final caveat would be if we, again, this is a good example, like this discussion, if we choose only to do the SIC codes, then we lose out on if there are other things that we want to change down the road or other things that I was hoping we would look at that were related to the SIC code. Now we're going to have to go back and make another change to the SIC code, you know, whether it's a couple months later or a couple years later. For instance, one of the ideas that I would like to talk about and look into is form-based zoning. Form-based zoning is where we're not as concerned, and I'm thinking more of a hybrid situation, which is what more communities do. Few communities have true form-based zoning. It's where you look at how does that building look and function. That's most important, not what they're doing inside. That's still a factor, but the most important factor is how does that building look and function in the neighborhood, the amount of traffic, the hours of operation, the height of the building, the mass of the building, how close to the road. Those are what's most important, not so much what they do inside. So the example would be a shopping center. Do we care too much about what's happening inside that shopping center as long as the shopping center looks nice on the outside, has reasonable hours, doesn't upset the neighbors, those kinds of things? So that's the discussion I would hope. And then so we update the SIC codes today and look at form-based tomorrow, then we'll be making massive changes again. I would prefer to do the whole thing at once. But if the council decides that they only want to tackle one at a time, well, that's what we're going to do.
The SIC codes are a big deal. I mean, we did B7 for the 27th Street, and three commissions had a kick at that cat, and it came down to the council where Alderman Solomon and I were making changes right up to the time we passed the ordinance, because it was like, why is that a permitted use? That shouldn't be a permitted use. That shouldn't be automatically permitted. We ought to look at that. So we change it to an S, and then we think about it for a minute. No, we probably ought not do that at all. Take it out. It's not an easy thing. But here, Pastor Ben, let's say he came in, and he was more small congregation, but internet-based. He was going to run a TV studio and a radio program, and so he only wanted a room this size. But it was going to be TV and internet and radio. Okay, what's that? It's not truly institutional. He's got a TV. What is it? We don't know. So we'd have to make something up. And that's where we've been since 1998, yes. Which is why I want to have to take a look at it. It's a good question. You still have the floor, and I didn't hear it.
No, that's fine.
Commissioner Fowler was there.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Having served on the Comprehensive Master Plan, we're not at that point yet, but I would like to see them do this in a comprehensive manner to change the UDO, because I agree with Joel. We'd just be, I think, making the mistakes we've made in the past if we do this piecemeal. At the risk of, I do think the Planning Commission, we should ask the council if we take the lead on this. And, you know, I don't know if we need to get their permission. That'd probably be a question for the city attorney. But, and also perhaps bring in, at some point we will determine whether the Planning Commission, with limited or extensive, one or the other, professional help from a consultant of some type, depending on what the budget is and what our finances are. But at some point, that's going to need to be done. Either it would be the Planning Commission with a limited consultant or the Planning Commission with a comprehensive consultant to do more. So I think you finish your work on with the attorney coming up and outlining what these changes and how much it's going to be. And I think a determination could be made with, and I would recommend the Planning Commission take the lead. Maybe it's, you know, argued in state statute that we need to take that lead. But that's what I would think we would want to do. Understanding, having been on the comprehensive master plan, what a time commitment with the public hearings, the twice a month, sometimes three times a month meetings, that it would be. It would be a real strong time commitment for the commissioners to sit on this at this table.
I think what the common council did Tuesday night was smart, if not wise. Let's get a document that we all can take a look at first that's reasonably clean. And then let's see what's bugging the staff. And then I think we're at the position where you, Commissioner Fowler just said, where we as the commission responsible for this document take a look at what the staff says is an issue.
If I could make one other recommendation, too. I mean, staff would be great. But there was also, I remember when Scott Matthew used to be with the Builders Association, Scott Matthew had some ideas because he's not with them anymore, but I'm sure there's somebody who's filled his position at the Builders Association. I mean, we should comment on this, but those are the type of developers we want to have them come in. We don't let them dictate to us what changes we're going to be making, but it would be nice to hear from them, from people, reasonable people from their organization that had legitimate concerns with our ordinance, that they could provide a comment to us. And I think filtered through something like the Builders Association and the other would be the realtors, maybe talk to them and get a reasonable person to give us the information. We could find out what was bugging them, and we could get that information.
And the commercial developers.
And commercial. I think they would come through the Builders Association, I would believe, but maybe not. You would know that. No. But those three would be three that I would look at and have them give us reasonable comments or filtered comments, because a lot of it was just complaining to complain.
Well, I think the people you appoint there is, or get to serve is important. And one of my issues has always been, we do real well with our local people, but they have a certain set of biases and a certain point of view and a certain scope. So I would ask that at that time we look on a little larger scale, a little different geography for some help. Commissioner Thins.
Joel, when that ordinance was passed in 1998 and then began to be amended, was that kind of consistent amendments over a period of time, or was there a lot of amendments at first and they started to taper off? I mean, how are we doing with it now? Are we amending at the same rate we were back when it was fairly new?
No. I think it started slow, and it's slow again. We did a lot of them shortly after the recession. We did make changes and substantial changes. We made good changes to the ordinance process-wise during that mayoral ad hoc committee that they had created. You know, we cut down our staff review time by a third. We had knocked out a couple steps. We had given staff a little bit more authority to make some calls that often can speed up the process as well.
So some of these amendments were driven by events, outside events that were happening at a point in time. So you can almost kind of pinpoint, this happened, we had to amend a bunch of stuff in there.
Yep. But before then, it was mostly project driven. We would run into a project that we wanted to approve and it wasn't working and we needed to change the ordinance. The biggest group of non-specific project was during that recession time when we were making changes to the process. That was more holistic kind of changes. And the other thing I wanted to mention, too, before I forgot, at the same time that we're talking about things that we want to change, if there's things that we don't want to change, that's just as important to identify as well. if we are comfortable with the natural resource standards or something else, it's just important to get that point across amongst yourselves, amongst the council, and of course the staff. So I'm not, you know, when we're saying we start with a brand new template, I think I mentioned it, we would still be incorporating Franklin things into that. And then that would be the direction Plan Commission would give or council would give, certain things that they would want to have little or no change to. If we want that extreme where we start with a brand new template, that there are certain parts that we're going to incorporate almost as is. That will be just as important to identify as well.
Well, you know, I like the idea of revising to get the amendments incorporated into the ordinance where they belong. That obviously makes it easier to work with, and organizational-wise would make it a lot easier to flow. But if there's a lot of outside influence that's causing changes that require that drive these amendments, that might not change.
Correct.
You might be going
yes.
through time and continually having this issue, and maybe the issue is incorporate the amendments as they occur into the ordinance as opposed to just tagging them on the back until they're an issue, a big issue,
yes.
and they become cumbersome for the people to work with.
Yes.
I mean, I've looked at that thing. I hate it when I have to go back through amendments and, you know, refer to this and refer to that, and pretty soon I don't even remember what I was reading.
Yep. I wanted, in addition to, I don't want to sugarcoat that this could be a massive undertaking, I also want to mention that I believe we can make it better. We're not going to make it perfect. So there will always be some amendments. We're hoping that we catch everything that we can foresee. So for a while, there won't be very many amendments. But I would even say, with that large of a document, just like the Comprehensive Master Plan, there was an amendment shortly after the adoption of the Comprehensive Master Plan, making technical changes to parts that may be required too. Hopefully, again, with the amount of resources and the amount of time that we have, those should be small and few. But I would guarantee that there's going to be a few. And if something brand new, a new change in direction happens shortly after we fix or update the ordinance, that could require significant changes to the ordinance again. Again, the consistency, I haven't mentioned that, the consistency between the ordinance and the plan is critical. I've mentioned it before during the process on the PDD amendment for Hickory Grove. Sure, I believe that the ordinances are more important than the plan, but the consistency between them is almost as important. And if the direction of the city is changing, it's going to show up in the Comprehensive Master Plan, but it may require changes to the ordinances too. And that could happen, you know, the month after we finish an update like this. So with that caveat, we will do our darnest, the Plan Commission will do its darnest, then the Council will do its darnest to get us the best ordinance we can get. But it's not going to be perfect. Hopefully it will be significantly better. And that's, I think, is achievable, significantly better. And maybe something we can be proud of for a while.
Mr. City Engineer.
Thank you, Mayor. When I interviewed for the job, I was warned that we're hard to deal with over here by developers. But I was also told by you that we want to maintain high standards. So since I've been here, I've been looking for ways, at least in my department, that things that I could improve that would be easier for developers, but yet still maintain the requirements that we're looking for. I think I found a few of those, but UDO, I'm still working my way through it. I've only been here a month, but my staff knows it pretty well, and talking with them and talking with Joel, I can see why we're hard to deal with. It seems like, at least my first impression is that we give too many opportunities for a development to come before a board, and we can be arbitrary and capricious on what we will and won't allow. In my previous jobs, I found it was very helpful to gut it, start over, be very specific on what you require, no matter how, you can be as detailed as you want about architectural, as much brick on facades and those kinds of things. And not everybody likes it, but I found the good developers appreciated it because they could look on your website, download the requirements, and actually come to you the first time with a full set of plans because you spell out exactly what you're looking for, what it takes. As long as it meets all the criteria, it just goes through, a couple staff meetings and not have to come to the higher levels, and they're good to go. And it was very easy. We smoothed out the process. It made it easier for everybody. And, again, I've only been here for a month, but it seems like there's a lot of, I think the term is arbitrary and capricious, you know, opportunities where, you know, we put minefields in there in the way for the developer, for them to trip up, and it creates a lot more work on our part and a lot more confusion trying to implement the rules too.
Alderman Mayor.
Could you just give an example of, you know, something you've seen in the month that you've been reading, that what a landmine would be?
And here specifically? So some of...
Well, in whatever you're reading that you see that would be an issue. And maybe this isn't a question for you, maybe it's a question for Joel, but
and
process.
And again, I haven't completely gone through the actually read the UDO. Like I said, I'm still learning some of the things. But some of the things that come up, I'll talk to my staff, and, you know, I guess some of the survey requirements we're looking at. It's like, you mean we just can't just approve this? I mean, it's pretty simple kinds of things. Some of the architectural kinds of things. It's, you know, why I think the pillars, it wasn't a pillar situation, but there's another situation that came up that we were talking about. It was a site plan issue, pretty minor, I thought. And the staff said, well, in the past, we've sent that up to the top, so we told the developer accordingly.
So it's been here a month, for crying out loud.
Well, and it might not have been the question for him. And, you know, what I'm trying to do is understand that process. And, you know, even tonight, so we had two projects come through. You were very happy with the church project, that that's the way the plan should come through. So obviously they had information to make that stuff happen quite naturally, whereas another project may not come through as simply as you'd want. So what happens in the UDO that, you know, trips up the developers to not make it happen as smooth as...
Mr. Fuchs?
Well, just for Victory Land, for example, I believe we have...
By the way, let's do...
What? Matter.
It's all right. There.
It's peach and
always
generic.
The
peach and generic.
Staff comments can, before a project would come to the Planning Commission, staff comments can be, you know, up to 80 some comments, and it's a lot of little stuff that some can contribute to bringing the full, nice set of ready to go plans to the Planning Commission, but it also is a lot more.
City Attorney.
Just to follow up, I was glad that Alderman Mayor asked the city engineer what he was thinking about, because when you say arbitrary and capricious, to me that means ill, ego. And I would throw out a hypothetical. I've heard different page number counts through the years, but I dare say it's the opposite of arbitrary and capricious, and that's because there is so much detailed information. Code. What can you put in a B1 business district? How many pages of extremely small print and categories are there? Go to the 1968 through 1998 zoning code. B1, if there is a B1, a business district, what? A page maybe of 12.5 font Times New Roman, and here's what it is. And if you want to use the term arbitrary and capricious, when you have A through Y, less than 26 categories. Let's see. Let's plug in one of your examples. Exactly, take the mayor's example. Is this a church, or is there's broad discretion? when there's broad discretion, that's where the argument drops in, that you're becoming arbitrary. I think the complaint with regard to the SIC code, and it's probably a bigger burden for staff than anyone, is because of the hundreds and hundreds of categories. And I don't know, take 57 Chevy in the SIC code. This is hypothetical. 1957 Chevy. And then there's 14 categories under that. They're all 1950 Chevy, but there's a blue, there's a pink, there's a red. And then it's the different engine sizes, and then it's different, and you have 78 categories for that one item. And that's why it's time-consuming from a SIC code standpoint. And just with regard to the big picture, you know, the council said, okay, put this all into one, and the reason it's been sitting there is because it's not just a matter of plugging in the new ordinances that were adopted. Went to a consult 6-7 years ago. Actually, it was in-house. In-house planner left. That became contracted work. It didn't get done because of time constraints. So it came back to staff. Staff was increased. You had single staff worked on that. I think it was 2 to 3 years. But Joel at the council said, no, it was maybe a little over a year full time. But when it lands on my desk, it's not just here's the updates, which I had said from time to time I could do over a weekend around the clock and just plug them in. There were comments. I mean, maybe this should be a lot of maybes, and it becomes, all right, there's your massive project. So it's going back to step one. By New Year's Eve, actually, Assistant City Attorney Joshi said by Christmas, when I told her about the council meeting, just have a totally updated version. Get it on this, get it on paper. Staff's going to come up with their top 20, what they think, and then not the council plan commission can think about it. So that's kind of the short version, and it runs the gamut, and it's in the eye of the beholder. For the, I think, third time now in April, I'm chairing the biannual government lawyers land use all-day seminar where you get all the top experts. Mark Sewell started the form-based zoning in Fitchburg. I had him do the presentation. I probably got the electronic version of the whole thing. I could just shoot that around, too. But it's all a matter of what you want to do, because there's, I don't believe Houston, Texas has its own code. You know, you can start on that end. Or UDO, it's quoted right in the 2003 amendment, which was the one big one, and that was all the environmental, more restrictive. That starts out with the whereas, quoting, not by name, but it was Commissioner Ritter, who sat right here in 1998 when the first of the UDO was adopted after 3 to 4 years, I think it was 4 years of review, was that this is a work in progress. So one big amendment was 2003, and that really pushed a lot of the environmental protections further out. The rest have been project-driven, and then with the recession, there was the mayoral ad hoc, and Nick Fuchs can probably tell you off the top of his head who were developer type people, including from organizations, and what they wanted to see amended. And hypothetically, it might go to that, why don't you do Houston style? So, I mean, that's the big picture of it, but it'll all be circulated information-wise, et cetera, somewhere within the next 3-4 weeks.
Mr. City Engineer.
In previous jobs, I have had way too many discussions regarding dumpster enclosures. That's the example. And it's a lot of those little things that probably come up in every plan review. It's not written anywhere in our UDO, I would assume. Specifically what we're... Okay. All right. Well, I apologize.
15.0101.620.
It's my... Well, okay. So maybe that's a bad example. But there... Over time, there's lots of those things that you start adding to every project. You know, I need to add this. And if you forget, you know, it doesn't show up. And then when they do come to the table with a set of plans, because it wasn't written, and you require something like, you know, your dumpster enclosure, that, well, where's it at in your documents? Well, it's not. So then you have to come to the board like this and ask for special permission. I guess, you know, I'm used to seeing a lot of those. And that's what, when we re-gutted everything and started from scratch, that cleaned up a lot of those kinds of things. So we didn't have to remember all those little details because it was all written and it was there. So.
Developers are looking for a consistency and a predictability. And I think that's the big issue they have with us. We try to be consistent, and we try to be predictable, but the document and the procedure does not allow us to be predictable and consistent. And we've got to clean that up. And the other point I'd like to make is that good developers and companies are pleased when they see high-quality standards because they want their investment of a lot of money and high quality to be matched by their neighbors. High quality, high value development. So setting those standards, and that provides a consistent, reliable piece of information for those who don't wish to do that. They know that they're not going to be met well. So that's why I'm always saying higher quality. Let's tell them up front. So, Mr. Teagle.
I was just wanted to touch on that. And if we tackle things piecemeal or if we tackle this comprehensively, I don't envision that there'll be a standard answer for every issue that we tackle. So, for instance, for things that are important to the city or the Common Council, there's more details. For those things that are important to the city and the Common Council, and they want to see that, then it goes to the Common Council. For those things that are smaller, for those things that we can easily reach a consensus and put that in the ordinance, we don't need to deal with garbage dumpster enclosures. Yes, it's required that they have to have the same, you know, the same primary building materials as the principal structure. And when they don't, then we bring it to you guys. Things like that, if we can agree, staff can handle that. Here's the guidelines, here's the standards. Doesn't even have to show up in the ordinance if you just tell us. Then we can do it. That's one less thing that they have to worry about. We'll deal with it because there's always something as you go from submittal to the staff, to the planning commission, to the council, to the building permit. There's always things. And if it's something simple, if it's something that we're all on the same page, don't waste a paragraph in the UDO talking about it. Staff will do it during that time frame. And then the things that are important, that's where you list more details. That's where it goes to the Common Council or Planning Commission.
Here's one, and then I'll give it to Scott. Parking standards. Dave and Kevin have heard me do this for years, and Patty, when we sat next to each other. In the UDO, it's now minimum parking standards, which means if somebody builds a pick and save, they've got to have an empty parking lot. For what purpose? You know, it doesn't make sense environmentally, and it doesn't make sense for land use. Doesn't make sense for me, who is the value per acre guy. Makes no sense. So why don't we have maximums instead of minimums? It's just stuff like this that just boggles my mind, and it's time to clean it up. Mr. Thomas.
When you write a code like that tries to stipulate how to do things or what to do, and you're dealing with an industry that has a certain amount of creative, artistic force behind it. I find that as I review these things, I look at what you're saying about all these recommendations from the UDO and everything, but I always have to go out to the site. I always get my car and I drive out to where this is to look and see what's around. Everything has context. And to just try to write a code that says this is how this has to be, this is how that has to be, that bumps against, you know, these people that are doing these projects in a way they don't work. You're right. People will do a lot of stuff to make nice buildings. Architects love doing that, man. They see awards on their wall when they see stuff like that. And they don't usually mind that. You can see it all over in other communities where there are some beautiful structures. But, you know, you have to allow that creativity. And, you know, they're kind of sitting there, what do I do? Because I have to follow this rule book. And I think that's where we have a lot of trouble with some of this stuff. And I've seen projects here that we've lost that I thought, you know, maybe if somebody was really sitting down with these guys and working with them on their level, they could have been successful. You know, the big Myers thing was one thing. I think there was a lot of, you know, conflicting rules versus this versus that. And they just finally went, they got fed up. And they, you know, I think there were things that could have been done with that project to save that thing. I really do.
Okay. You can talk to Joel about that later.
And I do think that there is a tussle there. If you do it that way, you give the flexibility to the developer and the city to work with the developer to come up with something unique to that site. But then the ordinances probably would have to be vague in general to allow that. And then you can get to the argument or the situation the city attorney mentioned, that now we're flexible with this guy. We've been working with this guy. Somebody who hates that project, you're arbitrary and capricious. I hate that project. I don't care what you're doing to the site or to the building. I don't like it. And you're working with them, and you run into those problems. There's always going to be that tug of war when we try to set up these regulations.
Ordinance needs to set a framework, but not a specific.
Specifics for those things that are important to us.
Well, that are required, serious requirements.
Yep.
So we've had a pretty good discussion, I think. Again, the council is weighed in advance of us, which I think is okay. I wanted to have this conversation so you got your juices flowing and got you thinking about it. So the commitment that staff has given the council is by February 1st, we get the updated, collated, and indexed clean version, and Joel and his staff would come back with the 20 top 20. And I think when we get that list, then we start our work. Commissioner Fowler.
Just one question. I mean, when we went through when the mayor's ad hoc went through, and because I agree with you, Mayor, that I think a lot of this has to do with process. Now, so, you know, we do have a lot of rules, but a lot of it is our process. I mean, some of those rules are good, some of those are bad. But I think once they change that process, I heard through the grapevine that some of the developers were pleased with the direction we were heading, but maybe that's not correct, Joel.
With the process changes?
With the process changes, yes. That they streamlined. So some of the more vociferous complaints that we have received died, tamped down a little bit. But we still need to make some other changes. So I think we can, again, come up with the objectives of what we're trying to achieve with either the process, maybe not change too much of the fundamentals, but if this form-based sounds intriguing, but if that would be a wholesale change to what we've done.
Yes. So we'll continue. So December 18th is our next meeting. It may be a biggie. So just be prepared. I hope you are. Any further, or do you want to?
Might be what?
It might be a biggie.
A biggie.
Long one.
December 18th.
We're still working on the details. Any further discussion on this item, or is there a motion on adjournment?
It's a great
move. Adjournment.
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all. Good discussion. Thank you very much.
I need to get a tooth extracted out of